Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Janos Prohaska building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark. With your host, Rob Floyd, and special guest co-host, Dr. Clayton Sayre. Tonight's topic, Return to the Planet of the Apes. Well, good evening, everybody.
We're going to see what kind of talk you make.
That's right. We're back with part two of our Planet of the Apes extravaganza. Last time we talked about one of the greatest sci-fi film series ever, Planet of the Apes, and we're going to continue, hopefully, from where we left off and talk for at least another hour on this one. So
that's right. Well, see, we can jump in, and it'll be pretty much like the movies, because it doesn't matter what they did in the last movie.
Right.
We're just going to keep going.
That's right. Where continuity doesn't matter and time doesn't exist.
That's right.
Now, speaking of that, that's something that we've had speaks about over the years, is that the timeline, which really doesn't matter much between the first and the second one, it could be days, it could be weeks, but you know it's pretty close in there. That's pretty obvious the way it is.
It seems like that, but apparently Zaius somehow got Zira and Cornelius out of their business, so you know it's a while past that.
Yeah, well, okay. Let me backtrack. Let me just take back that statement I just made, because there are problems with that timeline, with the times passage of time between those movies. Because, like you say, Zaius gets Cornelius and Zira off the hook for heresy, and is taking them as confidants, because he leaves everything in their hands when he goes. If anything happens to him,
yeah, because of everything that's developing. So this uprising of Ursus and his popularity and everything has taken place in this time. So
yeah.
I always thought it's got to be a few months at least.
Now,
and you never know, but at the same time, Taylor obviously hasn't gotten very far. So.
No. And how long did it take in the first movie for them to get from Ape City to the Forbidden Zone?
I'm trying to remember the thing that he, Cornelius, when he's looking at the map, says 3 days from one part, and then it was how many days ride to the cave was another day and a half when they were at the canyon.
When Brent leaves Ape City, he covers that distance pretty damn fast.
Oh yeah, which makes no sense whatsoever. So, well, where did he crash? You know, he didn't crash near the water either.
No, but he leaves Ape City, and then he's, you know, he and Nova, and then they're chased by those apes, and they duck into that cave, and they're, boom, that's the Forbidden Zone, Zaius and Ursus and the troops are marching towards later in the film. You know, they end up at the same place, so.
Yeah, but they're not marching through the woods. They're desert all the way.
Yeah.
They made city, and they're in the desert.
Brent took a shortcut.
That's right.
But the one, I mean, that one was bugging me the other night when I was watching it, but I was like, okay, I'll give them that. They had to move the movie along, you know. But when you get to
these movies subscribe to the J.J. Abrams approach, which is, guess what? We'll have an alternate timeline for every damn movie in this series. I'm just looking for Zaius Prime to show up. And
you know. Now, when you get to Escape, between Escape and Conquest, they tell you it's been 20 years.
Yeah, which is not enough time, but
it's enough time for Caesar to get 20 years old, but it's not enough time for apes to evolve to walk and be more human size. Like,
and there be so many and being used as slaves, literally.
Yeah.
So that's a compressed time, and that's a budget concern. You know, they didn't want to have to build sets, so.
Yeah, so we'll let that slide, even though evolution takes longer than 20 years. We'll let that slide.
To watch these movies, you've got to let a lot slide after the first one.
But then when you go from Conquest to Battle, okay, here's the problem, the big, big problem. Caesar isn't much older.
No.
But Virgil, all the other apes can speak and walk and talk as good as he could, or can.
And how do they end up to have the same outfits?
Yeah. Where do they? Who sewed up the outfits that came from the first movie? You know, and how did they even know what they looked like?
Well, Caesar knew what Jerry and Cornelius's outfit looked like.
So everybody should have been. Everybody should have been wearing chimp outfits.
That's right. Everyone's wearing the green.
Now, okay, I'll let that slide because maybe that was just a natural thing that happened. Okay, whatever. But you get to Virgil. Everybody is Caesar's age. Okay, and Virgil knows everything about everything. Then they go to meet Mandemus, who was Virgil's teacher when he was a boy. Wait a minute. How is this ape old? How is this ape old and wise and knows everything and was Virgil's teacher, but he's older than Caesar, who was the first ape to speak and to teach everybody else?
Mandemus was like teaching off on the side, you know, between courier runs to ape management. You know, they had a like little secret society where they were meeting in the basement, reading obscene books. You know.
Yeah. If you're going by the timeline of how old Caesar is, when Virgil was a boy was conquest, or before conquest, when no apes were speaking. So Mandemus being old enough to teach and to be smart enough to have something to teach other than, you know, how to, you know, eat a banana, it just doesn't work at all.
That is one thing that the dawn and rise of the Planet of the Apes have really done is kind of repaired your concept of how that evolved.
Yeah.
To where they could, more and more of them can speak. And
it's happening, you know, slowly. Yeah.
Movies, yeah. You watch the originals now and you have to just go, they've compressed the whole timeline.
Yeah.
I just have to accept it as is. 'Cause once you start questioning it, you go crazy.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. That's the other thing is, you know, I mean, we're getting, you know, super geek out on the specifics of the timeline and all that, but you can watch it and not think about that. And you don't really think about that when you're watching it because you just get wrapped up in the story and the performances.
Exactly. And there was, what was one of the other things that I thought was the ship? It was another one that we always joke about. Oh, I can't remember what it is.
Hurry, men. We need it.
I know.
The sad sack mutant.
Yeah, let's give a special shout out to that sad sack mutant.
Well, and the other mutant, some living in this hell radiation for all these years.
That's right.
That guy.
That's right. Well, at least we're not pulse line. We're not radiated, or what is it?
Radioactive. We're active, but we're not.
We're active. We're radioactive, but we're active.
At least we're active.
Now, there's an interesting thing that does continue from conquest to battle, and that is Culp.
How the hell old is he?
Who is the he was the like interrogator for the governor, and then he becomes the leader of this group that somehow he survived, and then he kind of tries to keep this group together. Unfortunately, the mutants in battle are nowhere on a league with the mutants beneath.
No, they're like, you know, third string. They're the B team. they're the mutants.
They're the act that warms up in the lobby before a concert.
They're the mutants that the mutants in beneath wouldn't let them play mutant games.
The island of misfit mutants.
God.
And who better to lead these mutants than Severn Darke?
That's right. Exactly.
Who also did some $6 million Man.
Oh, God.
The Bigfoot episode.
He did everything.
And, yeah, did all kinds of stuff. A lot of B-movies and just, you know.
You know, that's the thing about the TV show and what's, you know, the timeline and that, but a lot of people showed up on the TV show.
William Smith,
Mark Singer and William Smith in that one episode. But as apes, though, it's a TV show of apes.
And some people that were in the movies, Woodrow Parfee did an episode, and but
especially since doing the Williamsburg Film Festival, you know, that I go to, and meeting some of these older celebrities, finding out, you go look at what they've done, and you know them from a few things. But then you look at their list, their, you know, long list of credits, and you're like, they did episode of Apes. Holy shit.
He did Apes. Yeah,
like,
Apes.
Beverly Garland was a female ape on
he
that.
He did a chimp, a doctor.
Jacqueline Scott
did one.
You know, and of course, yes, I get an autograph Apes picture every time.
That's right. Well, okay, we got to share this story. This is an Apes TV story.
Oh.
And this is one of those geek, you know, of course, meeting Roddy. I didn't geek out too bad.
Yeah.
We got Chuck to say apes.
Yeah, yeah. We did get the word, we got him say Planet of the Apes.
He said Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, right from his mouth, yes.
And then we went to that convention in Maryland.
Yeah, was it Hunt Valley? Yeah, that Star Trek convention.
Hunt Valley, Mark Leonard was there, and he had the Urko appliance.
Oh, yeah, he let us try it on.
And, he just looked at us. I think he just saw that look in our face, and he was like, go ahead. I was like, ah, you know, actually to put the appliance on and just hold it up to your face, but also get to look at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a pity. That was in the days before cell phones, and we couldn't get these great pictures of us doing that. But, you know, it's just amazing that we've been lucky to meet some of these people because, you know, for our childhood, this was such a big thing for us.
Oh, yeah.
In addition to like Star Trek and our horror movies. And,
yeah. Well, I mean,
and,
before Star Wars, I mean,
Man,
you look at the way Star Wars is, you
all
know,
before Star Wars.
Yeah. And we were kids of Star Wars too, but this is before that.
Before that
hit big. Apes was huge.
Right. And this leads us to, everyone talks about Star Wars as being the push in merchandising.
Oh, yeah, the explosion.
I always find this odd because a lot of other things had big pushes for merchandising, but for such a limited amount of time, Planet of the Apes was just huge.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of stuff. And same studio, 20th Century Fox, but no one ever mentions that. They talk about Star Wars as being the real push. Of course, by pure volume, it was.
But Apes really had more merchandising than any other sci-fi film out there that had come along before that.
Any other film,
any
really.
Series or anything.
You know, or
I mean,
a film series, now, with the exception of maybe the James Bond movies.
Or, well, I was going to say the Batman TV show.
And the Batman TV
show. You know, but that was a phenomenon. You know, that was
But Apes, you know, with the Batman stuff, there was stuff for the TV show and stuff for the comic book.
Yeah.
And it all sort of runs together. Apes was, you know, most of the stuff comes out in 73 and 74, some in 70, 71, 72, some things. But
it was a short period of time for a ton of merchandising.
For the amount of stuff. And most of it is cheesy.
Oh, yeah. But some of it's
goofy,
really cool, and you know,
and some of it is cool.
We're still seeing stuff today that we never saw before that came out back then, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing the volume of stuff, and I'm not talking about the super cheesy rack toy stuff where they would just take an old toy and slap an ape sticker on it, you know, like they did with everything back then. But the oddball stuff, like, you remember in one of the boxes of joy I sent to you, that ape's pillow?
Oh, got it right here.
Right there.
Right here. Right here in front of the ape's case, right here, with all my ape stuff. So
there you go. Here, you're going to, hey, do me a favor. Take a picture of your ape stuff or a couple of pictures and send it to me, and I'll put them up.
We can post it.
Okay. I'll post some of the stuff up on the Facebook page. But this pillow, and you'll see it when I post it, but it's the face of it, I believe, is like yellow fabric, and it's got some screen printed graphic from the show or the movie on, but the back is all like black fun fur, isn't it? Like gorilla skin. And,
yeah, it's just black fun fur. But the pillow is, the artwork is beautiful screen printed artwork from Battle.
Yeah.
With Aldo, Virgil, and Caesar, and just gorgeous artwork.
And who's the marketing genius that they're sitting around the table saying, okay, what are we going? We got to put something new out here. The Mego figures have done great.
Well, they had
pillows. We need a pillow. We need an Apes pillow. What do you got?
I think the company that did this pillow might be the same company that did the feet that were the ape slippers.
Oh,
which I would love to get those. But those were actual ape slippers.
Apes slippers.
ape feet slippers. Man,
I mean, so, you know, the top of the heap, the creme de la creme of Apes merchandise, especially for us when we were kids, were the Migos. And the accessories and the Apes tree. I mean, I had the Apes tree house. And,
yeah,
but you know, I think I only ever had a gorilla figure as a kid. Older, I had gotten I've got a Zayas now, and I think I had a Cornelius at one point. I don't know. I didn't have any more apes.
Talk about where the holes are in your Mego apes collection after this, because I will hook a brother up.
Oh, well, please do. All I have is Zayas. That's where the holes are. I just got a Zayas.
Oh, well.
And I had to order boots for that.
I can pretty much fill in a lot of the rest of it.
Oh, God bless you, brother.
At least the original, the movie set versus the ones that came later.
That would be awesome. That would be amazing. Yeah. Oh, man, well, I got to start padding out your box of joy now. I got to find some stuff.
That's right. Well, one of the things I really remember about the Migos, and this is a fond Christmas memory, is when my dad set up, he had the treehouse, figures, and put it all up. You know, 'cause it would come... And I know part of it was when you ordered through the catalog, it just came in a plain brown box.
Yeah.
There were no graphics or anything. And that was the figures. They came in brown boxes.
Oh, wow.
In a bag and then inside of a brown box.
Yeah.
And it just said Planet of the Apes on the outside, but it didn't have a label or anything. It was not the Mego packages that I always got.
Yeah.
So my dad would open everything up. And I remember that one Christmas, he had everything set up already. And I, you know, having done this as a parent myself, it's like he would have had to got up at like 3 a.m. to do, or stayed up late.
Yeah.
And still, you know, back then we were up at the ass crack of dawn.
you got the treehouse and you got the figures. I got the treehouse.
I got
a gorilla later, but I didn't get the figures that went with it. I just got the Apes treehouse.
They were probably sold out, and then I got that garage.
Oh, wow, you had that
set. Which was the Forbidden Zone. I had that, and my parents would tease me. My sister told me this story later that they would come in there when my sisters would come and visit, and my stepsisters, they would come and they would sneak in the room, and while I was sleeping, kind of half wake me up and go, "Get those humans!" to tease me. Because they knew I was just, you know, I mean, I had all this stuff.
Yeah.
And just, you know, like we do now, know all the lines, you'd play it. I mean... That was huge that you would go out and play with.
Oh, yeah.
Play in the neighborhood, play Planet of the Apes, which was basically just capture and beat somebody.
Well, you know, you'd work with what you got.
There was very little story development.
No. You know, I remember the only other thing I can remember having as a kid.
The models.
I didn't have the models as a kid. I had a couple of the superhero ones, and I had a couple of some of the Aurora monsters, but I didn't have the ape models as a kid. I did have one or two of those little, you remember the little plastic figure sets?
Oh, yeah, the NPC figures.
Yeah, that had like a little fence or might have a horse and a couple of apes and some trees. I had one of those or one or two of those, and then I had at least... I had one of the coloring books, the one that has Cornelius and Zira and Baby Milo on the cover.
Right.
But that was at my grandparents' house. They had a little cabinet in the den that had a bunch of coloring books in it of mine. I remember there was a Superman one where he's on the front. It's a red cover, and there's a rocket and Superman. And then there's the apes. The apes one was the other one. Man, I remember. I wish I still had that. I remember coloring that all the time. But I don't,
it was. I learned to draw apes through those coloring books. Yeah. And for the longest time, I remember our friend Dale had told me that he learned how to draw apes from me. and there was a particular way that I had shown him how to draw the muzzle and the nose and the shape, and he reminded me of that thing years
Man,
later.
Man, that's awesome.
giving art lessons on how to draw apes.
Well, you know, and those skills have come to good use in his career, so, you know,
yes,
hats off to you for that.
So,
man, but you know,
it's been very, very good to me.
That's right. That's the only merchandise I remember having then, but I do remember going to the department store and seeing an end cap or a whole long line on a shelf of just apes, carded apes figures, and just going, wow, I want all of them.
Oh, yeah. And finally, you know, the apes toys you had mentioned, a lot of them were toys that they already had, like that NPC figure set that you talked about before. It was a Western set, and they just took the horses, took the fence, took the trees.
Yeah, just made the little apes figures.
Made the apes figures to go with it, and then packaged it.
Yeah.
You know, some of the rock toys are just the stickers, and then
ape phone.
The oddest thing about when they marketed this, so many of the toys, I guess the colors that were used for the movie characters don't translate well for a toy as far as attracting people, you know, something on the shelves. So they always felt the need to, like, Zaius would be wearing blue, not the gold.
Well, you know, not
he wore blue in a lot of the packaging.
Well, and Cornelius had brown, which made no sense.
Yeah, and the apes, the gorillas wore blue and green.
They changed for different products, though, because it's like the apes, the Zayas, the bank, I think, is blue, and the model kit is, the artwork on the box is blue, but then you get to the Mego, and it's like tan and dark brown.
Yeah, it's a cream color.
So yeah.
It's a cream color. But
that was an odd choice.
They're fairly close to colors.
Yeah.
And the Migos were unique because they capture the characters.
Yeah.
Really well. I thought Zira was just, when I was a kid, I was amazed at how much it looked like her.
Yeah.
That was always one that surprised me. And the only female character in the batch, you know, they're all male characters.
Yeah.
They didn't even make a Nova. And of course they couldn't do the license of a Heston.
So no.
You
got Action Jackson
kind of
astronaut,
a generic
basically.
Astronaut in there until the TV show, and then they actually did do. Ron Harper and James Naughton likenesses, which are beautiful likenesses, like all Mego stuff. You know.
Oh yeah, great stuff.
And then now we had a wonderful MediaCom set that unfortunately ended before they got Julius.
Yeah, but they did a lot of different figures. They even did Lucius figure for that set.
Yeah, they have a Lucius figure in there.
They did a Brent. I mean, they did a lot of figures for that set.
Yeah, two different Chucks in that set because they have them in the spacesuit and in the loincloth.
Unfortunately, they're just hard to find now. But
I don't have a complete set of those. I have quite a few of them, but
I only got two from that set, and because I just couldn't find them anywhere, so I gave up on it. But this,
yeah, I've given up trying to. Well, you know, if they fall into my hands, I'll take them.
Oh, well, of course.
And now we have the NECA ones,
which are beautiful, beyond beautiful.
Beautiful.
The likenesses are incredible.
They've decided not to continue that set, and we still don't get a Julius.
No.
Bud Cartelian, sorry.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be a Julius in my set. I'm going to customize a gorilla. There's going to be a Julius. And I am going to have a Virgil figure if it's the last thing I do. I'm going to cut the legs down on a Zayas figure.
And that's one they didn't in the MediaCom they didn't make a Virgil figure.
Yeah. What the hell's up with that?
And it's, you know, they didn't make mutants in the MediaCom set. They made mutants in the Sideshow stuff because there was Don Pedro Colley and there was the head mutant.
Man. Oh, hey, now there you go. There's something we didn't touch on yet. Going back to the movies.
The Barney Miller connection to
No.
Planet of the Apes?
Well, other people that were in Apes, yeah. Gregory Sierra was a mutant, and he was a Chano in Barney Miller and Fred Sanford. You know, he was Julio.
That's right.
But
then in the same movie, who do we have? Inspector Luger himself.
That's right. Another Barney Miller connection.
So you have James Gregory.
Yeah. And King Tut was in Victor
King
Buono.
Tut. Victor Buono?
Yeah. But you go, you know, everybody, you know, knows Roddy was in, and they want, everybody said in every Planet of the Apes movie, but we know David Watson played Cornelius in Beneath. So he was in 4 out of 5 movies, but,
right.
You know this. And
Kim Hunter's in 3.
Yeah, you can answer it. Who else, and this is for everybody out there, so give them a half a second before you answer it. Who else was in 4 out of 5 Apes movies? But played
ding 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 ding. And who was she married to?
Could you answer that for me, Clayton, please?
Oh, I was going to throw it to you. I was going to give you the pleasure.
Okay, well, Natalie Trundy.
Natalie Trundy, and who was she married to?
She was married to, I believe, Arthur P. Jacobs, wasn't she?
Arthur P. Jacobs.
Yeah.
And you are correct, sir.
And wasn't Nova wasn't she married to like Zanuck or something?
Richard Zanuck.
Yeah.
Linda Harrison. They were all sleeping with each other, you know.
Well, you know,
except for Roddy. And
it was a close.
Who
set.
Knows who he was? Yeah.
But Natalie Trundy is interesting. Whereas Roddy played, he played two characters. He played Cornelius and he played Caesar. But Natalie Trundy played
three.
She played a mutant, then she played Dr. Stevie, and then she played Lisa in the last two films.
That's right. And let's see, who else is in more than one? Well, Maurice Evans is in 2.
He's in 2. Kim
Hunter's in 3.
Yeah.
Well, actually, technically, 4, if you count. Isn't she on the film in Battle?
Her voice, it's a still picture in her voice, I think.
In her voice, yeah.
Yeah.
So. I mean, they just reused the footage.
Yeah. Buck Cartillion was in at least 2.
He's in 2. He's in Battle and Planet.
Yeah. Lou Ayers is in 2.
Which 2 is Lou Ayers in?
Oh, wait, no, wait. I might not be getting Lou Ayers mixed up. Lucius.
Lou Wagner.
Lou Wagner. Lou Wagner was in 2. Lucius. He's Lucius in Planet. And in Conquest, he's the waiter chimp that throws the fire.
Sets the fire. Yeah. Now
what's his name? Norman Burton.
Norman Burton's in 2.
He's in 2. Yeah.
Severn Darden is in 2.
Yeah. Chuck.
Chuck is in 2. That's right. And Felix Silla is in 2.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, I wonder though if anybody else, any of the like. A background ape, or maybe one that might have a line or something, is in
More,
all 5,
yeah,
or is in 4.
There's people that they probably hired stunt people to be in.
Now in Battle, though, here's something you know, and diehards will know, but John Landis
is in it.
And, a background human in Battle.
And David Gerald.
Oh, yeah.
David Gerald was in Battle because he was writing the adaptation. They let him come to set, and invited him
that's
to be
cool.
one of the apes. So.
Now, isn't what's his name? I think it's Chris Stone. Mary D. Wallace
is he in
The Howling? Who I don't know if it's him or not, but the guy that is lifting the cart and Aldo says, Let me show you how it's done.
Oh, yeah. It looks like
him. It looks a lot like him. I don't know. I have to go back and look at that. But whoever that guy is, it always reminds me of him.
There was one other person. I'm trying to think. Not Woodrow.
Yes.
It's another person that's in a small role that's in two of them. It's not Woodrow Parfee. And it's not Dr. Galen.
No.
Who you met. Who
that's
you
right.
Met. He was at
that's
the
right.
Williamsburg show. What is his name? First name. Wright is his last name.
Oh, God, you're killing me. I just drew a blank.
I know. I can't believe I drew a blank on him. Oh,
Who's the gorilla?
Shameful.
Yeah, it'll come to us in a bit. Who's the gorilla that's talking to Dr. Zayas as they're walking around the cage in the first movie?
Oh, Hunt Leader?
Yeah.
Or Marcus is...
Who's that? Who's playing Marcus?
That's Norman Burton.
That's Norman Burton. Okay, that's what I thought. Because Buck Cartillion is Julius. Okay. I'm back on track now.
So Norman Burton, who was Felix Slider in Thunderball.
Yeah. And wasn't he also...
McMillan and wife.
And Joe Hardy on the Hardy Boys, wasn't he their dad?
Yeah, he was their dad.
Yeah.
Now, which brings us to, are we to the point where...
No, we're not there yet. We're not there. We're almost there.
Okay.
We're not there yet.
Okay.
We're holding on to that one.
That's a famous game for us.
Yeah. Here's something Phyllis and I were talking about that I don't quite recall. In Conquest, at the very beginning... do we ever hear Armando refer to Roddy by name? Because his name was Milo. His parents named him Milo.
Yeah, he picks... I don't think he ever says...
He never says his name. So when he's picking his name out of the book, he's purposefully looking for Caesar. Or does he just happen to turn to that page and go, huh, I'll call myself Caesar.
I think he's looking for a name... I always thought that was purposely that he picked that name.
Oh yeah, that's because of what it implies and everything. But the way he's flipping, he like grabs a handful of pages, a handful of pages, a handful to get to a specific page. You'd kind of have to like lick your fingers and flip individual pages to find it. Typically, you know, it's by luck he opens right to Caesar.
He's an intelligent ape.
He's an intelligent ape. I guess I did it.
You realize this is like the King Kong argument about him being on the ice and whether or not the ice could hold the weight of this giant 50-foot gorilla. And it all comes down to, dude, we're talking about a movie about a 50-foot ape.
Just let it go.
At some point, none of this matters. Yeah.
Just let it happen. Just let it happen.
Yeah, so that was you know, I had a thought. I'm thinking. I had it's gone. It's like that line from Dick Tracy. It's gone. No, since we were talking about what were we talking about?
The cartoon series.
Cartoon. Okay, now we're talking about the cartoon. Okay, you know the great thing about being ADD?
Squirrel. Oh,
I'm sorry. Was there a question?
Yeah. You know, I don't remember the cartoon seeing it on when I was a kid. I don't remember it being on TV. I guess because it was on so short a time, maybe.
It's only 13 episodes.
Yeah, they just barely did a season, you know. And I don't think I have really... got a chance to watch it since then. I've seen little clips here and there.
It's made by Filmation, so you know there's a lot of stuff gets reused and reused and reused.
But it was more like the original book, wasn't it? Where the technology and everything.
They have more technology. It doesn't make them any smarter as characters, but there are interesting things in the cartoon. You know, you have an Urko, you have Zayas, you have Zira and Cornelius.
Yeah.
Then you have a new group of astronauts, and there's a woman and two guys.
Yeah.
And at one point, they actually come across a man named Brent, another astronaut.
Oh.
But it's not our Brent.
Yeah.
Apparently. You know, okay. I remember seeing that episode and going, wait a minute, that's not... what's going on, you know, and there's stuff like that. And there's odd episodes, but it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's not great. And for Saturday Morning Fare, had the animation been better, I think it would have been considerably better.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, the artwork is slightly better than a color form set.
Man, high praise indeed. I'm sure it's on YouTube, but it is still available, I believe, on DVD out there. I'll have to check Amazon on that. Just like the TV show is available.
After you see it, you will just go, return to the planet of the apes.
Return to the store from which I bought it from.
That's right. But no, I think it's worth it. Here's the interesting. Yeah. One of the guys that does voices for one of the characters is Austin Stoker.
Oh.
McDonald.
Battle.
And one of the guys that does, I think he does Urko's voice, was actually in the Ten Commandments.
Oh, wow.
With Chuck.
Well, there's a connection right there. So, keep it in the family.
But he also did some Harry O and some pretty much every other show that's out there. I mean, one of these guys that, you know, his IMDb is 150.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like that. It's still working.
Well, yeah, those guys do, man. They just,
I think
like
he's still
that.
Working.
They work until they can't work anymore.
They just find them, you know, bent over on a stool in the sound booth. And go,
well, I mean,
oh,
you know,
okay.
it's they work really until these, you know, old school, old Hollywood, you know, working actors. That's what they do, man. That's their job, and that's what they love. It's like, you know, my mom's friend, Peggy Stewart, who was been in stuff since the 30s, for God's sake, is, I want to say she's 92 or 93 now, and worked just up until a year or two ago. Still, I mean, she did an episode of NCIS. She did, My Name is Earl. She did an Adam Sandler movie just like 3 years ago. I mean, man, you know, just out there working.
Well, that was the, you know, the work ethic of those people was, this is a job, and it's like any job, you're just working. They're not, you know. I think that would be great to be those kind of people.
Oh, yeah.
If I was an actor, I'd want to be like a character actor, and you just worked all the time and got to do all kinds of stuff. But I think that would be so cool. But
oh, yeah. Well, then and like, you know, the character, I mean, Chuck was the big name in all the five of the movies. But you get the character actors like, of course, they all had their own careers and different highs and lows at different points. But like Roddy and like Kim Hunter and Maurice Evans, but basically just really great character actors. You know, they.
Oh, Roddy was just—he was a workaholic. I mean, he just did much stuff. The others, you know, here and there, and of course, Maurice Evans died in '80s, early '80s,
something like that.
I think if he lived that long.
Yeah.
And Kim Hunter was the '90s.
Yeah, but
I think maybe.
Yeah, but they, you know, they did their fair share of stuff over the years, but they, what they were going to be known for is Planet of the Apes, is what they're going to be remembered for. I mean, you know.
For better or for worse.
Yeah. I mean, and Planet of the Apes was one of the first science fiction franchise, wasn't it?
Franchise, yeah.
The first one to actually have sequels, and unlike today, back then, sequels weren't guaranteed moneymakers. They were
and certainly they were the shrinking dividends, the returns, because it was fully expected the sequel, you got to make it a lot cheaper because it's only going to make half of what the first one made, and then each one, and Planet of the Apes did do that.
Yeah, now
it went down, they made less money.
Now that's what they expected to happen, and that's what did happen because they caused that to happen. But do you think if they would have done like today where, this movie did good, we got to make it bigger and better in the next one. If they gave them a bigger budget for each sequel, would the movies have been better and more successful?
I think if Beneath had been better made, yes, it would have
yeah,
been.
So if they gave
really
it a bigger
big.
Budget and gave them the time to make a longer and better movie, it would have done better.
And worked on that story. I think it would have been really good. and still have the downer ending. It's just
Well, it had to have that ending. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and the downer ending goes well with the idea of the first one, you know.
They had to top that surprise downer ending in the first one, and how are you going to do that?
But the
blow
makeup,
it all to hell.
That's right. And the makeup for the mutants is beautiful.
Yeah.
Had they just supported everything else. And there's so many good ideas, you know, like the revolution trying to develop in Ape City.
Yeah. They spent
and the unrest.
Yeah.
And
it was just too much time with Brent and Nova wandering around and not enough time on the story elements, like
right.
like you're saying on that one. And then Escape is kind of the, I don't know, that's kind of the voyage home of the Ape series.
Escape is like, it's odd how these movies go, because the first one is made for adults.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Although kids jumped on the bandwagon.
Well, because of the ape makeup, yeah, but...
Right, and then Beneath tries to be made for both, for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, have it both ways. Escape.
Beneath, or as I like to call it, cashing in on the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. Escape is really a strange movie because it's so lighthearted to a point, and then it turns dark really quick.
You know, and Dr. Hasslein, I never understood, and watching it again, especially the less and less I understand his character. It's like it's a personal vendetta. He says he's trying to protect the human race, and he may believe that, but he doesn't care because they do everything to cause to happen.
Yeah.
What he says he wants to prevent, he does everything to cause. Where if they would have tried to ask more questions of Cornelius and Zira and tried to understand what happened so they could prevent it from happening, because it wasn't the chimps that made it happen.
Right. And he becomes the villain, and that, you know, it just better development. But Escape is an enjoyable little movie. I think you're right. It's kind of like The Voyage Home. I happen to like Voyage Home, but Voyage Home is a lightweight movie.
Yeah. Well, what I'm getting at mainly in that is it's less of a budget than any of the other ones. Insofar as they didn't have to build any sets or do any outer space effects. And the same thing with this. They used the streets and the buildings that were already here, and all they had
and
to
they
do
only
was...
They only had the two ape...
Yeah.
Ape here. Well, and Milo.
Yeah. You know.
Who gets killed quickly. So.
Yeah. But then we get to, you know, we get past Voyage Home, and we go to...
Okay, wait a minute. Speaking of...
Oh, yeah?
You cannot watch Escape and just wonder, what the hell was Sal Mineo in this movie for? and then I read a thing about him and why he's in it.
Yeah.
And it was Ronnie talked him into doing it because he wasn't getting any parts or anything at that time.
Oh.
And he was depressed. And so... He said, why don't you take this? And he was claustrophobic. The makeup drove him crazy. So just as well that they killed him off pretty early.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he wouldn't have been able to handle it after that.
So, and then the monkey that kills Milo is Janice Prochazki, who is known to Star Trek fans as playing the Mugatu and the Horta and building those costumes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he was one of those ape performers from the 60s. He was in a Lucy episode.
Yeah.
You know, I think he did, may have done it like a Time Tunnel or Outer Limits or stuff like that.
Made a career of playing gorillas and monkeys.
And really one of the lesser ape, you know, gorilla performers, because that is just a horrendous gorilla suit.
Oh, well, wait, let's talk about that. The one in at the end in Armando's circus in the cage.
Mama.
But the mother ape in the cage.
Oh, God,
that was an awful suit.
That's an awful one, too. That's the kind of thing you look at it go, that is some serious Party City shit.
Yeah. Yeah, they were really cutting the budget there. You could tell.
You know they went out and just bought that off the corner store. It's like they looked at the Don Post Hollywood Gorilla mask and went, $39.99. No, no, no way. What do you got for $9?
What do they have down at Woolworths? Come on.
Yeah, it's going down to Ben Franklin, 5 and 10.
Ben Franklin, yeah. Man.
Oh. Well, but then Conquest comes back and
it goes dark.
They really make smart use of a location. And of course that was that New Century City that had just been built at that time. And really smart use of it. You can go there today and it's pretty much exactly the same.
You know, and it still has a look today of being slightly ahead of the time architecturally and all that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It has that odd, out-of-place kind of look. That was a great choice for that.
So they got lucky with that, being able to film through all that, and that gave it a great sense of some years in the future.
Yeah, and of course everybody, all the humans wearing dark, somber colors and black. And
And it's too bad that those suits, with some alterations, weren't what they used for battle. I think it would have been cool to have them in kind of a jumpsuit that had the beginnings of what the uniforms would
turn into. Like maybe some of the leather, the glyphs on it or something.
Yeah, that would be sort of interesting to show how they evolved from
Oh, that's an interesting idea,
And that the colors that they eventually adapt were actually the colors that were developed by humans to divide them. I think that's sort of a neat idea.
That is an interesting idea. Man, I might have to make some drawings just for my own amusement, you know?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, there is a great book. The guy that wrote it, the book's upstairs, or I'd run up there and get it. It's called Conspiracy on the Planet of the Apes.
Oh.
And it fills in the gaps dealing with not the main characters, but kind of behind the scenes of between Planet and Escape. Planet and Beneath. And Dr. Wright, or Dr. Galen, and Marcus, and some of those people, and eventually Cornelius, and to a great extent, Dr. Milo, and it talks about how they get the ship out of the water. All of that. It's a really cool little story about how they do all that. And then there's that one, and then you had sent me that other one that has like the kind of the history of the Zaius family. Do you remember that one?
Oh, the comic book.
Yeah, what was that called?
Hell, I don't know. I sent it to you. You've got it. You tell me what it's called.
I can't think of the title of that one.
It was just recent, though.
It was really cool, too. And it's interesting, all these other...
Yeah, I need to find myself a copy of that now that I sent it to you, because that was actually really well thought out from what I remember.
It really was.
I need to go back and read that again.
Conspiracy, that's great. It has some beautiful, beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
And it's not a graphic novel. It is just a work of fiction, but with illustrated throughout with these beautiful color illustrations, full page illustrations too, by different artists. And then even the Marvel dollar comics, the large format.
Oh, the black and white magazines.
The black and white magazine.
Yeah.
They had a story, an ongoing storyline, which was that, what was it? Kingdom or Terror on the Planet of the Apes that had a unique, had some really good stories, humans and apes working together, and their stories take place out west.
Oh, wow.
One story I remember, they involved hiding out. There's a little secret place up inside Lincoln's head at Mount Rushmore, and they actually have to climb up through his nose to get into this secret base that was in there.
Oh, wow.
And that was a really neat idea. And
yeah.
You know, you always thought, well, there's other directions you could take this, and I think they sort of foolishly, with the TV show and the cartoon, basically copied the first movie, the format of it, and then tried to make it work for everything after that, instead of going,
I mean,
this idea of other areas on
the first movie, you had Rod Serling working on it. I mean, the script. Mm-hmm. So after that, you know, you're hard pressed to find somebody. And that's something I wanted to ask you about the makeup. We keep going because that was the hook of the whole thing. You hear Tom Tuttle, you hear John Chambers, you hear that was one other name associated with the makeup that I'm.
Well, the movie
I'm drawing
was
a blank
Chambers.
With. Okay,
the movie's Chambers. William Tuttle. William Tuttle didn't work on Apes.
Okay, I thought I'd heard his name associated with Apes at some point somewhere.
No, William Tuttle TV show. I mean, not TV show. The Twilight Zone, of course.
Yeah.
From there, and yeah, but John Chambers was the main person.
Yeah, it was somebody else.
Ben Nye.
Okay. That's what I was thinking of.
But Chambers primarily was the one that
he designed it, developed it, and
designed what became the final prosthetic, and wisely choosing to make them thin pieces. That allowed for
expression,
as much facial movement as they could, and even the nicest thing, and it's surprising they didn't do this for everyone, and that is Maurice Evans' piece is three pieces.
Oh.
Whereas everyone else's is essentially two pieces.
Yeah.
His brow piece is a separate piece. And
Then
the nose muzzle section, and then the bottom of the muzzle, the chin. And I've always wondered why it was only his.
Yeah.
That, you know, because that allowed him to really wrinkle his nose a little more.
Yeah.
But I don't know I've never read anything of why there was a decision to make his different than anybody else's.
And, you know, there's no jumping ship on another topic real quick, because we're fastly approaching an hour here. And
Well, you wanted to talk about how the makeup evolved from, like, the first movie to Battle.
Well, yeah, how Roddy's look changed, as far as it wasn't just the hair. They softened the features up a little bit Cornelius to Caesar. Or that could have been just coloring. Not a lot.
No, the sculpture changed a little bit. It's close.
Yeah, it's
really, just like Galen's is very close. But his is different.
a more noticeable difference between Galen and Caesar than Cornelius and Caesar. Theirs are closer, but it's slightly different.
And the coloring.
Yeah.
Because Chambers, by that time, didn't work on any of this. You know, Chambers worked on the first two, and that was it.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, I don't think he did Escape, and definitely not Conquest and Battle. One of the big things, when you watch Battle, you can see the approach of the gorillas. If you look at Aldo's makeup,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't have the subtlety of shades.
Oh, no. Uh-uh.
The first movie, and even the second movie had. When you look at the Ursus makeup, Aldo's looks like it's one color, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
And it has a sheen to it, which is not unlike a real gorilla's skin. It has a sheen to it.
Yeah.
But it never came across as real, especially as we were getting older watching the movies too, you know. It looks worse and worse.
Then, you know, the Mego figures really nailed that contrast. And when they got to they made an Ursus figure, or an Urko figure, I guess, between
what they called Urko and Ursus.
Yeah, he had the helmet. But he was still the face was a different color. It was light. It was brown, and the hair was black. You know. But then you get to the Aldo figure, or was that called Urko? in the figures?
Well, those two figures, Urko and Ursus, they kind of, some of the packaging ends up being wrong on some of them. So you have one figure that has the helmet, and he's got a brown face and black hair. And the other figure
doesn't have,
really looks like Ursus, actually.
But he doesn't have the helmet.
His head is all black. Yeah,
yeah, his face and head is all black. Yeah.
It's all black. But that's the one that looks like Ursus. So he's Ursus, and really the other one is Urko.
Yeah.
Although he looks like more Urko from the cartoon.
Exactly.
And then there's poor Soldier 8. No other name.
Just
no
Soldier 8.
General, Lieutenant, whatever. Yeah. Just Soldier 8.
Man. Oh, man. You know, we've really, I mean, okay, we've gone, this is the second episode, second podcast that we're doing on Planet of the Apes, and we've talked for 2 hours here, better than 2 hours, and we've jumped around a lot, but we've really barely scratched the surface of what we could, if we sat down with and went each movie, and not even going through the plot, but really talking about it, dissecting it, talking scenes and stuff.
You would have 5 episodes.
We could do a whole episode on each movie, but I think we covered a lot of ground and had a lot of fun. But you know, I think we covered a lot of ground here on a really good overview of a lot of different aspects of Planet of the Apes, and maybe I know we've talked about a few things that we haven't talked about in the whole 20 years that we've been obsessing over apes to each other, and a lot of things we've retread on for the podcast.
That's right.
But and we could go for another hour or two in the same vein, the same line of just randomly going around things. But I'm not going to put the listeners through that, anybody that's listening.
No.
Because at some point, it turns out that we're just talking for us, and that's
it. That's right. They've heard enough of the damn dirty apes.
That's right. When we start quoting in character and maniacally laughing at each other, then it's over.
That's right.
But there is one thing that we have to cover, and if we run a little long on this one, so be it. If we run long, and long we will run, we have to...
this is our holy duty.
we have to share with the world those people that are listening that have not been around you and I at any kind of group gathering or just hanging out anywhere talking.
You're lucky.
You're lucky. You're lucky as hell.
You have no idea how lucky you are.
But we started this thing just goofing around talking with each other well over 20 years ago, and long before the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon became a thing, we discovered that the world indeed revolves around Planet of the Apes.
That's right.
And we can prove it. We can prove it.
Am I going to be put on the spot here?
You're going to be put on the spot, and then you can put me on the spot. I haven't done it in a while. I haven't exercised the brain in that area, but we did find out, and we were able to prove, and when we brought this up to people, they're like, and then we'd nail one or two, and they're like, well, how about this? Well, what about this? And we would boom, 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 and when we were done, they're like, damn, you're right.
Yeah, I have not done this in a long time either, so I hope you don't set me up and I fail.
It's the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, but we did this first, and it was with Planet of the Apes. So the objective, if you don't know the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, is that, and we don't say any number of degrees, the shorter you can do it, and I'm going to explain the shorthand of it in just a second.
But
you
actually,
go ahead.
We always like the convoluted route.
Oh, yeah. The longer you can drag it out, the more
the
fun it is.
The longer you can drag it out.
But you take an actor or a movie or a topic of some description, and you link it back to Planet of the Apes through association with other actors or other movies, other topics, until you get to Planet of the Apes. Now, I'm going to – the shortcut to this is – If you can link something to the Adam West Batman TV series, that is a direct line to Planet of the Apes, because Roddy McDowall and Victor Buono were guests on the Batman show. So that's direct to Planet of the Apes. If you can link it back to Star Trek, that's a direct line to Planet of the Apes, because Mark Leonard
And Ricardo Montalban.
And Ricardo Montalban, direct to Planet of the Apes. And everybody and the brother did a Star Trek or did a Batman. So if you get to those two, boom, you don't have to go any further because it's automatic. So let me see. We'll go. let's go modern.
Okay.
Or semi-modern. And this may be real easy. It may be real hard. I don't know. I'm not thinking of the link. I'm just going to throw an actor out there. One of your favorites, Anthony Hopkins.
Oh. Anthony Hopkins. Okay.
And what Clayton is thinking is, what is Anthony Hopkins, something else he has been in or involved in that links to something else?
I want to make it fun here.
Well, just, you can make it fun, but if you can do it quick, just to show everybody how fast it'll go.
Okay, Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs with, Charles Napier, who was in Star Trek.
Star Trek, done. Anthony Hopkins in Three Steps.
There you go.
Awesome. Let's see. Let's go.
If I would have went the more convoluted route, I could have went Anthony Hopkins, Elephant Man, John Hurt, Alien with Tom Skerritt, who was in Devil's Reign with William Shatner.
And boom. There you go.
Oh my God.
See, that's how it's done right there.
I can do that.
Let's take, okay, Sting from The Police.
Sting. Oh, is this me again? I thought it was my turn.
Oh, well, do Sting and then you hit me. Go ahead.
Okay. Sting, who was in Dune, directed by David Lynch, who directed Elephant Man.
Okay. You've already proved that Elephant Man goes there. Okay. See, you're starting to believe us. The world revolves around planets.
All right. I'm not going to be kind on you, though.
Oh, you son of a bitch. Go ahead.
No, I'll pick someone that you like. Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee.
You can get this real quick. I'm just testing you.
I know. Well, I'm, you know, and you get put on the spot and you freeze. Man, you know, here I am drawing a blank. This used to be so easy, this game. Christopher Lee to...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. It's.
Are you ready to phone a friend?
No, I'm not going to phone a goddamn friend. I'm already on the phone with the one I would phone.
I don't know what I would call.
See, the beauty of this is, though, is Phyllis can edit out these long pauses, so it sounds like I did it just like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Want a hint?
Yeah, give me a hint.
Long Shadows.
No, I'm drawing a blank.
House of.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank at who else was in that.
Wonderful.
Oh. Christopher Lee to House of Long Shadows, a Vincent Price to Batman. How about that?
That's right. Or Ten Commandments.
Oh, yeah, Ten Commandments. Damn, yeah. Oh, man.
Yes.
Okay, give me another one. I got to redeem myself.
Okay, Oliver Reed,
okay. Oliver Reed to... Oh, you're going to love this. Are you ready?
Okay, give it to me.
Oliver Reed... You're going to shit. Oliver Reed to Condor Man. Okay. Wait a minute. I'm not done. Michael Crawford. Okay. Okay. To Hello Dolly, which the big staircase set in Hello Dolly.
Oh, is it from Beneath?
Is the mutant sitting beneath?
There you go.
Vindication. Right there.
You've been redeemed.
Oh, man. Oh, that felt good. Okay, exercising those muscles. Okay, let's go modern for the kids out there. Okay? Here's one for you, which this is really easy, though. But I'm going to give you Chris Evans.
Okay. Chris Evans... Tommy Lee Jones to Tommy Lee Jones to JFK with Oliver Stone, who directed Any Given Sunday with Chuck Heston.
There you go. Okay, give me another one. Give me another one.
All right. You get Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig. Okay. Daniel Craig to Ray Fiennes as M, to the Avengers, with Sean Connery as the bad guy, Sean Connery to Norman Burton.
There you go. Good job. Oh, man. I think that's enough of that.
Okay. We That's how the game is played, and that's what we do for fun at parties and stuff. Oh, man. But it proves.
A lot of social fate there.
Yeah. It proves that the world revolves around Planet of the Apes and not Kevin Bacon. So.
And not Kevin Bacon.
like I said, we're past the old hour mark here. And anything else you want to throw in or want to add to the big Apes extravaganza?
No.
No, I'm done. It's over.
I just think the good thing about this is a certain just a goofiness about Planet of the Apes in the direction that it went.
Yeah.
And then there's the first movie. And then the recent revival with Rise and Dawn have brought back the seriousness of why we loved the first one in the first place. And that's something I think to their credit is that they have been able to recapture that element of it. And they make the movies with the key characters being the apes.
Yeah.
Not the humans. And that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. Well, it's tough to do, but generally, on the surface, people watch any of the movies, the originals, to see the apes.
Mm-hmm.
You want apes on the screen, you know, even though Chuck's, you know, performance as Taylor is the main thrust of the movie. You want to see the apes on the screen as much as possible.
Oh, yeah. Then after that, that's when it turned. It was a movie about the apes, not about the astronaut.
Yeah.
And everything after that was really, it was about the apes. And with these movies captured that part. Who you're really interested in are these characters and that just happen to be apes.
Yeah. And I'm really interested to see what they do with the next
with
one.
War.
Yeah. As far as how the apes evolve more, because they've got to become more intelligent and more articulate and everything to be interesting, to be more interesting, you know.
But the last one, I mean, tell me, the first time you saw on that trailer where Caesar's on the horse.
Oh yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
And the first time they have a hint of the outfits, that's going to be another step to like wow.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm waiting for.
You know.
Yeah,
but they may never do it.
They may not. They may not, but they're to me, it'll get boring if they don't.
Yeah.
You know?
I think they will start to wear elements of it, like maybe the bandolier belt or maybe a piece of armor or something.
Yeah,
slowly.
Something.
Yeah, I think that's only a matter of time.
Yeah, I know it's too early. You know, it's the very beginnings of the mythology that this is setting up, but, and I can't recall, there's no... What made the original, the class system between the different levels of apes? But then again, that was commenting on social political things that were going on
right
at the time, and this doesn't have that as much in today. So it's commenting on a different.
Right, but you see the dynamics start to split. You know, with like Koba versus Caesar, you see Maurice's role.
Yeah.
Starting to come in as Caesar's confidant, almost like a Virgil type of character. You see how that starts to develop through all these.
So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But until then, we've got the original five. on DVD, Blu-ray, and the TV show, and God help you, the cartoon.
The cartoon is on there. Give the cartoon a shot. It's not awful.
Yeah,
look,
yeah,
we've
yeah.
Got, there are far worse cartoons out there now.
Oh, true.
Squidbillies, okay?
True. As always, I will be putting up a bunch of images and photos. This might be the biggest folder of photos I've put up for a podcast on the Facebook page. And I'll run the trailers. I'll post those for each of the original movies, I think. And so check out the Facebook page, Phantasmo After Dark, for all the info. And drop us a line on there if you know, do you want to say how cool this episode was, or how rotten it was, or you know,
or
agree that wow, the world really does revolve around Blasphemes. Or drop us a line at phantasmoad@gmail.com. That's it. Hey, Clayton, you got anything you want to pimp or push or promote?
No.
You're not making any convention appearances anytime soon.
No. All I'm going to say is,
right on. Well, thanks for being on this. This has been a lot of fun. We haven't really sat down and talked about all this stuff at length in quite a while. For anybody who doesn't know, Clayton and I have been best friends, brothers from other mothers for I've said it a bunch of times, over 20 years, but some years ago Clayton left me, and and moved to Georgia.
Oh yeah, that's gonna come across real good. And it is such a good thing we're both married, okay? That's all I
gotta say. And has been living in the fine state of Georgia for a number of years now. On the plus side, he's right near Dragon Con, so he doesn't have to travel if he wants to go to that.
That's right.
But we do, you know, we'll still talk on the phone once a week, once every other week, but usually not at this length and go into this much geeky detail about stuff. So this has been a lot of fun. And
indeed it has.
I believe we will do this again now that the technology is working correctly. I see Omega Man being talked about in the future at some point. That's inevitable. And so we're definitely going to do this again. And thanks for being on, and thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.